Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Second Take. I am Ryan. I'm here with my co-host, Roland, today, and we're going to be talking about the NBA second round of the playoffs so far. All the series have gone at least five games to this point. Looks like the Cavs are going to get closed out by the Celtics as we speak, but we want to start off with the most noisy series so far. In one that the Wolves started 2-0 up against the Denver Nuggets in dominating fashion, looked like they were the best team in the NBA for a minute there, started off 6-0 in the playoffs. The Nuggets then went off to win three straight, and not, I wouldn't say blowout games, but they weren't necessarily close, and Minnesota never really had a chance in those games. Roland, why was Denver able to come out of this 2-0 hole and rattle off three straight games?
The simple answer is Nikola Jokic is inevitable, right? Just when the world started to count them out, there were NBA analysts and professional podcasters that started to question whether or not Minnesota would sweep the Nuggets. There were people out there saying that. And then just like that, Jokic flipped the switch. He figured out, hey, every time Gobert is guarding me, go score. And they won three in a row. The biggest eye-opener was Aaron Gordon. Having him be the secondary playmaker, having him bring the ball up the floor, was an ingenious move by Michael Malone to have him initiate the offense. Murray has struggled. I mean, I can't remember if it was game three or game four, he played pretty well. But really, he's been a non-factor the majority of this series. It's been the Nikola Jokic and Aaron Gordon show as far as the Denver Nuggets are concerned. Aaron Gordon has stepped up in a big way, and he's really just thrown that extra wrinkle these past three games, and that's the biggest difference. I mean, Jokic is going to go score 35. When we analyzed this series before it started, we knew that in order for Jokic or for the Nuggets to win, Jokic was going to have to be a score-first player, right? And he's just eating Gobert for lunch. Nothing new. I knew that was going to happen. I mean, DPOY my butthole. I thought Victor Wembanyama should have won it, but whatever. But I'm not going to lie. I did doubt there for a little bit after game two because of the massacre that happened. But now they're right back where they left off. They're going to win the finals. I mean, I don't really know what else to say, but props to Aaron Gordon. Because he's been the difference maker.
Yeah, you bring up a good point in that they had Aaron Gordon start bringing up the ball more and being more of that secondary playmaker. Jamal Murray was getting hounded in the first couple of games. He brought it up. They would have Nah. They'd have McDaniels. They would honestly like come up, try to trap him as soon as he passed half court, right? They were being very physical with him. Denver had a really hard time getting into offense, getting into good sets. And then when they made that switch, it opened things up a lot because they can't really do the same thing with Aaron Gordon, just because it makes it harder when you do have two guys who are capable of doing it. And then Jokic can do it if he gets a rebound too on occasion. And look, the Denver Nuggets woke up. Jokic is showing why he's the best player in the NBA, because he is, and I think he's starting to widen a gap here. The Nuggets really didn't take the Wolves seriously to start the series. They went down 0-2, kind of like the Lakers. They didn't really take that series super seriously either, it felt like. But now that they had their backs against the wall, they had to turn it around, turn it up again, show why they are what we know they are and are capable of being. As you brought up, Aaron Gordon has been awesome, and he's made it so Minnesota can't disrespect him. He's shooting 66% from the field and 61% from three on 17 points per game in this series. He did exactly what he needed to, turned it around from that LA series. And that really ruined Minnesota because they've been trying to just leave him wide open this whole time, and it's not working. And now Minnesota has to account for him.
It goes back to exactly what you said before when we were analyzing the series, who the key X factors of the series were going to be. You pointed out Aaron Gordon. He's going to need to be able to make threes, and he's been able to. What I didn't see coming was his playmaking, was him bringing the ball up the floor, getting people involved in the offense. Right? I knew he was going to get some dunks here or there. I did not expect him to come out and be the second best, the third best player on the floor, right behind Jokic and Ant. Right? He's completely taken over the second fiddle spot for Murray in this series. I'm not saying in general, but he definitely saw that Murray was struggling against the length and the different options that the Minnesota can throw at him and stepped up his game. Kudos to that, because he has been the key difference maker in these past three games. Exactly like you pointed out when we explained it. So,
yeah, and I mean, now from Minnesota's perspective, their biggest problem is their offense has been kind of rough. They've only really had Ant has been really the only reliable player. Cat had a good first two games, but he's really struggled the last couple of games when they've been losing. And honestly, if they want any chance to win the next game, take it to game seven, potentially win the series, because they're not out until they're out, obviously. They're still talented. Cat has to step it up. I mean, he has to get you over 20 points, which he hasn't done recently. Jaden McDaniels also needs to hit his threes. He's shooting 16% from three in this series, which is terrible. Like, they're starting to leave him, Denver is, more and more. And then Naz Reid also needs to give them a couple of double-figure games, because you can't just have Anthony Edwards be your only go-to scoring option and no one else can do anything. I mean, you're not going to go to Gobert to create offense. He's just a result of good offense and passing. So they need their guys who have ability to make their shots and step up and score. Otherwise, this series is going to be over in six.
If you're Minnesota, do you flirt with the idea playing Gobert less minutes?
I do not. I need Cat to stay out of foul trouble. Because here's the thing. No one is going to do better on that team than Gobert is, right? Like, Jokic is just Jokic. When he goes crazy and he hits those tough shots, he's going to hit those tough shots. They want to get Gobert away from the basket because he's so dominant at the rim that they want to move him away. And, you know, the problem that they've been having is Cat will get in foul trouble and he'll go out of the game, and they can't play that little help defense scenario we've talked about. And so Gobert's having to match up with Jokic more, and then their help defense just can't compensate for that. So I need Cat, honestly, I think, is the one who needs to be the one to step up, because he's going to have to guard Jokic, and it'll make Jokic more of a passer, but he needs to stay out of foul trouble so he can stay in these games. Like, a lot of the series for Minnesota, it's going to end with Cat, I think, having to step up.
And that comes back to my second follow-up question. Let's say this goes the way I think it's going to go, which is Minnesota loses probably in six after another terrible performance by Karl Anthony Towns. Edwards can go score 50. I don't think they'll win, right? That's
We've seen it happen.
So Cat foul trouble or shooting 5 for 20 and only scoring 13 points. If that were to happen, do you try to trade Cat for pieces around Edwards, you know, Gobert kind of as your core?
Yeah, this is a really good question, because I think a lot of that was determining on what happened in this playoff run, right? If they were able to beat Denver and make it to at least the Western Conference Finals, you're probably keeping him. If you make it to the finals, you're obviously keeping him. But looking at the way he's just struggled, I don't think it hurts at all to explore something like that. They do need offense, and they do need someone else who can score. But I would definitely be open to hearing offers for him. I'd be looking at guys who I'm interested in, who I think could fit with a Gobert, Edwards, McDaniels kind of core, kind of group there. But I do think that's a good idea to look at that market if they do end up losing the series.
It's mostly a maturity thing with Cat. You know, there was a play, I believe it was game four. They were sometime in the third quarter. They were going on a little bit of a run, trying to bring it back after that crazy collapse at the end of the half. And he Euro-stepped and bulldozed the defender. I can't remember who it was that was guarding him, and got an offensive foul call. and he stood there with his hand up in the air after he made the shot, thinking that it was an and one, when all nine other dudes were walking the other way as soon as the whistle blew. Right? It's just, it's those type of things that makes me question whether or not Cat can be a focal point on a championship caliber team just because of his maturity level. He can fill up the stats. He'll get you 25 and 10 a night, like clockwork. But that also begs the question, what's his trade value like if he goes out and he completely wets the bed in game six and he's the main reason why they blew a 2-0 series lead? What is even the trade market for Karl-Anthony Towns?
I think, honestly, regardless of how he plays, he's going to have a trade market. Teams will be interested. He's still young. He's under contract for a long time, so I'd be looking at the small market teams, especially to be more interested in that guy. Teams who are looking to shake it up or take a leap forward, who are bad right now. Even if you can get multiple role players who fill roles that you think you need, such as scoring, keeping that defensive intensity still there. I think he still does have a lot of trade value. You're not going to get a 1A guy for him. You're looking for a secondary star that you can maybe match him up with, compare him to, or maybe even less if you're getting more players back in return. But I don't think if he, because he's had a decent enough playoffs, that I think he still has a good trade value. Teams look at him as a second or third guy on the team. I don't think it's going to drop that far, but he could probably be a second scorer, third best player, maybe just third best player, third scorer, because sometimes he is unreliable in the playoffs, as we've seen. So we'll have to see how that offseason plays out for Minnesota, especially with the lack of picks.
I agree. I mean, it all comes down to offense for this team, because the defense is, you know, head and heels above everyone else. And if your two main engines of offense are Anthony Edwards and Karl-Anthony Towns, and if one of them isn't pulling their weight, it's very, very apparent that they can't score. I mean, there were times that they were missing layups, wide open three-point shots, because they were expecting players like Naz Reid, Jaden McDaniels, Alexander Walker to make those shots at a consistent clip, when in reality, they're all just defensive dogs. Right, Naz Reid's had a game here or there. Jaden McDaniels will give you a game here or there, but none of them are going to consistently give you, you know, 4 for 8, 4 for 9 from the 3-point line. You know, when the rock gets swinging and you double team Edwards and they're the open guy, right? They're just not that good from a shooting standpoint. So I feel like trading Cat for some actual legitimate 3-and-D players, or a dude that can go get his own shot or can make a standstill three at a consistent clip, will help this team if they decide to go that route. We'll still see. There's two games possibly left, so Cat can redeem himself.
100%. In a whole week, the perception on this could completely change. Yeah, so you never know. But looking at the other series in the West, we got OKC and Dallas. The series is tied 2-2. They're going to play another game tonight, so by the time this comes out, it'll be 3-2 in someone else's direction. What are your initial thoughts on this series? It's kind of, it felt like the start was all OKC, and then Dallas kind of took over, and then OKC came back that last game. How's this looking for you?
Before the playoffs started, I picked Dallas to make the conference finals, just because I liked the matchup that they had against the Clippers. And then I thought that the inexperience of Oklahoma City would play a bigger role than it actually has. Yes, we've seen it in this series a little bit, but that game four kind of assured me that Oklahoma City has a closeout guy. Shea can win you a game when it comes down to crunch time, right? But Luka Doncic has looked subpar at best. This is not the Luka Doncic that we're used to seeing in the playoffs, right? He is averaging only 22 points per game, 7.5 assists, and close to 11 rebounds a game in this series. So a significant drop off from what we usually see. right? Luka, you can normally pencil him in for 30 points at least. So that's a mix of the long athletic wing defenders that Oklahoma City can throw at him. But I do think there's a little nagging injury playing into his effectiveness. And because of that, I'm starting to doubt whether or not Dallas is going to make it out of this series.
Yeah, so a couple things for Dallas. As you touched on, Luka is a little hobbled for sure. He's shooting 39% from the field in this series. He's also being guarded by Lu Dort, who completely shut down Brandon Ingram in the first round. So the combination of those two things is just not going well for him right now. He definitely does need to step up at least a little bit. But also, I think Dallas needs to use Kyrie more. He's averaging 15 points per game in this series, and he's shooting fine. He's just not getting the shots. I don't know if he's not being aggressive enough, if they're trying to play too much through Luka, but I think they need to play more through Kyrie. Like, that's the reason they brought him here. That's why they have him here. If he's not hurt and he's healthy, they need to rely more on Kyrie to get their offense. They can still run through Luka, but that's going to be a big thing, I think, for Dallas going forward and a thing to watch, because I don't think if Kyrie's not getting you 20 points, they're probably not beating this Oklahoma City Thunder team. So that's going to be really big for him. A big positive for Dallas, and probably why they've won two games so far, is PJ Washington is torching OKC.
Yep.
He's averaging 21.8 points on 51% from three. And in the regular season, he was only 31%. And OKC is choosing intentionally to play off of him. But they kind of have to respect him because he's getting way too many wide open looks. And he is an NBA player and he is hitting these shots. They're almost playing him like we thought Aaron Gordon might get played against Minnesota. And like Aaron Gordon, PJ Washington is hitting his shots and he's absolutely killing OKC. And the other thing, OKC should probably practice what they preach as well, because the biggest issue for them so far is the fact that they're still playing Josh Giddey. He only played 12 minutes last game, and he's 18% from three in this series, 13 minutes per game. They still start him and play him a little, like just to start the first and the second quarter, or first quarter and second half. And that's basically it. He's just been so bad. They should bench him and start Cason Wallace, who's been terrific defensively.
He's fantastic.
And shooting 50% from three in the series. And I think if they do that, they could probably get rid of Dallas pretty quick if Luka keeps playing this way and Kyrie's not getting the shots he needs. Because I feel the momentum being on OKC's side right now.
I agree. We need to go back to the Giddey thing. Bench the pedophile, okay? Just get him or trade him. Like, this guy reminds me a lot like, I can't remember his first name, Robinson, who played with Oklahoma City with Westbrook and KD. He was the defensive player that couldn't make a free throw or a three.
Andre Roberson.
That's his name, okay?
Yeah, he was awful offensively.
Giddey is the equivalent. Not as bad offensively, okay? But he's this team's version of that. The glaring dude that you just play because everyone was high on him a couple years ago, and in reality, you have much better options to go to. Giddey can't shoot a three. He also is kind of slow-footed on defense, and he's a much, much overrated playmaker, okay? Everyone was head over heels for his playmaking ability. That really, not amazing. So you hit it on the nail on the head there. They need to bench Giddey. And if they do that, they win the series. It's as simple as that. Okay, because he is a liability. You need to look to move off of him in the offseason while you still can. Because you have so many other players, so many other assets that it's like you're not really losing anything.
In a way, it's almost like OKC. It's like, okay, we're going to play who we have, and we're going to keep who we like, and we can get rid of who we don't, because, like you said, they have so much. And I agree with you. I think they need to get off of him. He just doesn't fit with that group. You look at the starting lineup, even if you moved him to the bench, potentially, like, he just doesn't really fit with that team. He's still a young player with some value, still can get better. It might not be the place for him in OKC. Because I don't even know if he's an NBA starter. He might just be a backup wing who's a decent passer. Like, we still don't really know what his career is going to look like yet. And early in his career, he played a lot because the Thunder were bad. But I do think it's time to move off of him and find other combinations that fit your core a lot better, because they have their future big three. And so you want to find guys who can complement them. And Josh Giddey does not.
I completely agree. So bench him or you'll lose. That's what the series comes down to.
Absolutely. And then another series where, speaking of guys not playing, the Pacers and the Knicks. New York is currently up 3-2 on the Pacers, with the series going back to Indiana. New York had OG Anunoby go out in the series with an injury. He's not going to be back unless they make the conference finals. Impressive. They essentially play seven guys a night, now playing Alec Burks, who wasn't playing before. So now he's playing fantastic because,
of course,
solid player. But, like, you know, what happened for New York, just the kind of feel you get for that team. Guys just been stepping up all year. Do you think Indiana has a chance to win the series?
I thought they should have won by now. The Knicks are literally, like you said, they only have seven dudes. They're one injury away from calling one of us up to go play for them. Okay.
For
That's
real.
The situation that New York is in. And I have never seen a team like this before. Okay. Where they are literally just, they remind me a lot like the 2004 Pistons-esque, where it's just all heart over everything else. They're like the Joakim Noah Bulls, only everyone's Joakim Noah. You know what
with
I mean?
One Jalen Brunson.
With one Jalen Brunson.
And that's it.
The Knicks make absolutely no sense why they're even able to stay in this series, yet alone come off of a 30-point blowout in Game 5, right? Now, I don't think we've ever seen a team like this. But at the same time, I am ready to say Jalen Brunson is the greatest Knick of the 21st century. I don't think it's close. Yeah. He is like Allen Iverson 2.0. He's shooting 35 shots a game, scoring 40, and he might just backpack this New York Knicks team to the conference finals, and it's one of the historically great playoff runs. It reminds me a lot like 2018 LeBron, okay? Brunson hit this postseason is averaging 34 points per game, 4 rebounds, 7.5 assists. LeBron averaged 34, 9-9, okay? So LeBron had a little bit more rebounds, a little bit more assists. It's LeBron James. But man, Brunson needs his kudos. The mere fact that they're one win away from the conference finals after suffering 4 to 5 injuries from key players. I mean, their second best player is not even in this. Their third best player isn't even healthy. You know what I mean? They have no depth. They're playing 48 minutes a game, and they are blowing the doors off of Indiana. And it's kind of embarrassing from Indiana's perspective. What the hell happened to Tyrese Halliburton in Game 5? You know what I mean? What's Rick Carlisle doing? Does he know what he's doing when he steps in New York? It's like he forgot how to coach basketball. Neesmith's the little guard, right? Or no?
Nembhard's the little guard. Neesmith's the bigger guy who guards Brunson.
Why the hell is Nembhard guarding Brunson? Every time Brunson is being guarded by Nembhard, it's a 40 piece. Just whatever. But it, not to take away from New York, I do think Indiana needs to make a couple adjustments, and they would have probably won the series by now. We'll see. We'll see if they actually get their heads out of their butt.
You brought up a lot of stuff, some really good key points. I mean, in that blowout loss too, it might have been enough for the Knicks because they got rest in that game, funny enough, because all their guys play 40 minutes a night. And that game they played like 20 minutes. So that might have been a blessing in disguise for that team to just get a little bit of rest. You also bring up a good point. Neesmith in this series, when he was guarding Jalen Brunson primarily, he had his two worst games of the playoffs. And whenever anyone else on Indiana guards him, he just cooks and he just absolutely murders them from New York's perspective. But from Indiana's perspective, besides the Neesmith thing, because he should always guard Brunson in this series, I think it's very simple for them, actually. They are, and it all comes down to Tyrese Halliburton. They are 5-1 in the postseason when he shoots at least 15 times. Whenever he does not shoot that much, they are 1-4. And last game, he shot 9 shots, and they lost by a lot. He is a good player. He's a great offensive player. And when he shoots it, he's very efficient, and he can score when he's looking for his shot. But for whatever reason, that aggressiveness is not always not there for him.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's a coaching thing. I don't know if it's just a him thing. But if he was shooting 15 times a game, all series, kind of like you mentioned, I think Indiana probably would have already beaten New York at this point. But instead, they're down 3-2. And, you know, I think New York's going to be able to pull this out. Indiana might be able to win at home, but New York has 2 games, home court for game 7 if it does happen to go there. And if Tyrese doesn't show up in either one of those games, it's going to be over for them. And, you know, we'll see how New York fares if they do win the series, because all their guys are going to be absolutely gassed going against Boston. But we'll get there when we get there.
Yeah, that's the question I was going to ask. Do either New York or Indiana pose any type of threat to Boston?
No, they don't. Let's be honest. No. If Indiana wins, it's, you know, they beat a Giannis-less, Dame-less half the series Bucks. If they beat New York, New York plays 7 guys. Only 6 of their rotation guys, you know, from the regular season are playing anymore. So they would have beaten up on 2 injured teams. If New York wins, I just don't know if they have enough with their guys having to play so much, because Boston has so much talent and a good amount of depth. I don't know if New York's going to be able to hang with them, especially offensively, and against a team that can compete with them defensively and rebounding. So I just don't think either of these teams are that big of a threat to Boston.
It's unfortunate that everyone knows that, because this has been a really fun series.
It has been.
The energy in New York, I've never seen it like that in my entire life, right? Because my entire life they've sucked. So it's really cool to see a little 5'11" dude goes average 45 in the playoffs and just single-handedly put a team on his back. But both of these teams are going to run into a buzzsaw in the next round. So really cool, really awesome story. Jalen Brunson is officially the greatest Knick of the 21st century. And that, we'll just leave it at that.
Fair enough. And then we're just going to real quick touch on that last series. Just wrapped up. The Celtics beat the Cavs in 5 games. They will be in the Eastern Conference Finals. The Cavs clearly didn't have enough offense. Donovan missed games 5 and 6. Definitely ended things easily, which might have been 5 games anyways. They'll hope to extend Donovan this offseason, maybe look to add some offense. We'll see if he wants to resign and stay. But the Celtics finished up the series. They really haven't been tested that much in either game or in either series. Porzingis will be back for the Eastern Conference Finals, it looks at. But, you know, good and bad. They haven't used a lot of energy in these games. But like I said, they haven't been tested. Do you think the Celtics, based on their past so far, do you think they're going to be fine in the Eastern Conference Finals?
Celtics are fine in the Eastern Conference Finals. Honestly, my one takeaway from this series for Boston, and it's a net positive, was game 3 when it was close. When Cleveland came out and threw their punch. Game 2, they just threw in the towel. I mean, it was the same story with Miami. They just forgot to wake up and play basketball that morning, and they lost. Game 3 was when Cleveland was going to say, all right, let's make this a series. Let's come out first game at home. We just beat these dudes. We've got a chance. And it was a close game. That was my biggest thing with them. I think they're like 5-13 in one possession games all year. So they have definitely been a blowout win or a close loss all season long. And to finally get kind of against a quality opponent, win when the chips were on the line, so to speak, when it was close, made me feel very comfortable that they're going to make the finals. So that's my one takeaway from this series is game three. They showed me what I needed to see, and they're probably going to make the finals.
Yeah, it feels like they're kind of a lock for the finals from that Eastern Conference perspective. If they don't get there, that is a massive disappointment. And I'm honestly not even too worried about them not getting to the finals. Like, just not a thing I stress about. We'll see if it matters for them, the kind of lack of competition compared to their team, if it'll matter when they get to, if they get to the finals or not. We'll have to see. It might also matter who they play. Because if they play Denver, might not be the best thing for them. But if someone else, like, let's just say OKC makes it, they might be able to survive just because a bunch of these guys have been to the finals. But once again, that's one of those things we'll see when we get there.
The biggest thing out of this series, now that they are officially eliminated, the Cleveland Cavaliers, what's happening with Donovan?
Oh, man. Honestly, he's never going to ask for a trade. He's never going to ask out. He's never going to say if he's going to leave or not. And if Cleveland is scared, if he doesn't re-sign with them and Cleveland is scared that he's going to leave, I think they're going to pull the trigger and trade him because, as we've seen, he is basically 80%, 90% of that team. He's almost everything on offense for this team. And you can't just lose that for nothing when you've sold your whole future to the Jazz to get him.
Yeah.
So Cleveland has some decisions to make. I don't think he really wants to be there. I will say this, even in Utah, even here in Cleveland, he's done very good at being present where he is and not really having his foot out the door, right? He's still being a good teammate to his teammates and all of that. But I just don't think ultimately that's where he wants to be. I mean, he's going to get a chance to say where he wants to go for the first time in his career. And one of those teams are going to probably try to trade for him. Rumors are Lakers want him, Nets want him. Both spots are spots you could see him wanting to stay. So it'll be a drama filled for Cleveland this offseason.
I definitely believe so. I know the big rumor that has always kind of lurked over Donovan's head was the Knicks. That makes no sense. If you're
not anymore,
not trade for him. Okay. You have Brunson, which is his daddy. Every time they play in the playoffs, Brunson completely schools him. Where it could get interesting is the Nets in a three-team deal with the Knicks.
Mm-hmm.
Because who wouldn't want to see Mikal Bridges on the Knicks? Let's be honest here. Just reunite the 2018-2016 Villanova squad. Just throw them all on the NBA and see what happens. That'd be awesome.
The crazy thing about that is he fits perfectly
with that team. Of course he
does. He's not a number one player. He might not even be a number two offensive option, but he's a really good offensive player. He's an elite defender. He would just fit perfect with them. They'd have a scorer, they'd have a defender, they'd be long. Like, it's just funny how that works, how that Villanova team, it would be a good NBA team.
Well, the 2018 Villanova team is arguably the best college basketball team in the past 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
They just completely slaughtered everyone, much like UConn this year. But it's interesting to see. I think Miami could be in play. There's rumors surrounding Jimmy Butler because he's 35 years old and wants a 4-year Supermax extension. And then there's always, you know, I'm not saying this just for views. There's always the homecoming 2.0 with LeBron James. Why the hell not? 2 years, just go to Cleveland. Let's go. The Eastern Conference is weak. You'll basically only have to beat Boston to make the finals. Why not? You know what I mean?
Hey, Donovan's staying as long as Bron's there, so it's a good point. Anything else about the playoffs so far?
No. I think that caps it off. Denver's back. That's all I got
to
say.
So true. Denver is back. We'd like to thank everyone for listening today. Don't forget to check us out on YouTube as well. And subscribe and like if you enjoy what you listen to and or watch. And we will talk to you guys next time.